So in this episode, I would like to talk about knowledge in regard to Vipassana meditation and following the Buddhist path. With some traditions, you do get an emphasis on it, on the notion that what we're looking for is a non-conceptual understanding of reality. And it's absolutely definitely the case with Vipassana meditation undertaken in the Theravada tradition of Buddhism, which is the school of Buddhism that I've practiced over the years. It is undoubtedly the case that what we're heading for is a non-conceptual, comprehensive, transcendent understanding of the true nature of reality. And as we follow through the insight path, those insights that do arise are non-conceptual understanding of the true nature of reality. So the true nature of transience, the true nature of conditionality, the true nature of paticca-samuppada. There is a non-conceptual appreciation of these things. So that people therefore assume that that no intellectual work is helpful, and that the last thing we should be doing is noting in meditation, because that's obviously conceptualizing, and isn't that taking us away from the purpose? So it is a nuanced position that we need, because it is incredibly helpful to note in meditation. It is incredibly helpful to do some intellectual study to gain a knowledge, an idea of the terrain that we're going to be covering in insight meditation. But it is a nuanced position, and we have to understand where thinking and noting is going to be helpful to us and where to draw the line with it, and then to focus exclusively on the non-conceptual investigation and understanding that we need. So firstly, what we call ultimate reality, so the components that go to make up each and every conscious experience, ultimate reality, it is incredibly helpful to develop an intellectual appreciation of the subject. So that does mean intellectual study. So I would say, as a bare minimum, what people would need in order to come to an understanding of ultimate reality, you will need to understand the five aggregates. You will need to understand the three universal characteristics. You will need to understand paticca-samuppada. So you will need a working understanding of conditionality. That's an absolute bare minimum, but that'll be good enough to get you started. And so what we really mean with the five aggregates are learning some lists, learning the lists of what's contained within the materiality aggregate, what's contained within the feeling aggregate, the perception aggregate, the mental formation aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. Understanding conditionality means at least having a working understanding that everything that does arise in our conscious experience does so due to conditions. So there's the Buddhist aphorism, this being that comes to be with the arising of this, that arises. When this does not come to be, when this is not, that does not come to be. With the ceasing of this, that ceases. So an understanding of the independence of all the components that go to make up our conscious experience. And obviously paticca-samuppada, there has to be a working understanding of the 12 links of condition-dependent origination. That will help somebody overcome hindrances, and that will also then begin to show people the truth of our actions having results, so the law of karma, and obviously the implication of rebirth as well. All of which I got into in a certain amount of depth in my videos on paticca-samuppada, so it's always useful to dip into those and help with that working knowledge and that working understanding. So what we're talking about there is developing knowledge, an intellectual understanding, so if you like, mapping out the terrain. Now we have to traverse the terrain, so we can't just rely on the map. So the first thing to point out is that you just because you've understood it intellectually means very little in the greater scheme of things. We have to come to the direct knowledge, the direct understanding of all of this as being the living reality. So that's why we have to meditate. That's why study alone is not enough. So there's intellectual knowledge, and that's going to be transmuted into insight knowledge through the actual practice of Vipassana. So when we meditate, we are not thinking about the teaching. Meditation is not an intellectual exercise. Certainly Vipassana meditation is not an intellectual exercise. The study that you do remains in the background. It's there and it's called upon, so that when we're in that space, meditative space, where there are no hindrances or very few hindrances around, there's that sense of peace, of calmness. The mind feels normal because it's not preoccupied with all its worries. It's a relatively blissful state to be in. It's calm, it's relatively happy. And the mind quite automatically attends to whatever is the most evident impact, sensory contact at any given moment. So the mind just naturally goes to a sound, or goes to a tactile sensation, or goes to a thought, or goes to a feeling, or a memory arises in the mind, and that's the strongest impact at that moment, so the mind attends to it. And what we're doing when we meditate is consciously, mentally verbalizing what it is that the mind attends to. So when we become aware of a sound, we note the arising of the sounds, we note sound. If it's a feeling, we note a feeling, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling, and so on and so forth. You get the idea. So there is a deliberate intellectual noting of what has occurred. Okay, and the way that ties into the intellectual study is that our ability to discern the different components and different phenomena that's arising, our ability to note accurately what is actually taking place, is brought about through the prior study. So it's not that we go into a meditation to deliberately see things. We remain open, we remain in that lovely, vulnerable place of just allowing whatever wants to arise, and then we note it, and our ability to perceive and delineate exactly what that component part of our experience is helped tremendously by the intellectual study that has come about. And so this brings about a very important component of the whole endeavor, which is clear comprehension. So people will always talk about mindfulness, but very seldom include clear comprehension. The Buddha always talked about them in tandem. It's mindfulness and clear comprehension. So being mindful, being aware of, choicelessly aware of whatever is present, but then clearly comprehending it for what it is. So there is this clarity of the recognition of a sound as a sound, of a thought as a thought, of a feeling as a feeling, etc. So you can see how all that fits together. Now, an insight is a different kind of knowledge again. Just noting that that was a sound, that was a thought, that was a feeling, that's not an insight. Not an insight into ultimate phenomena. You know when there is an insight because there is this, a true insight, because there is this clarity of seeing which is non-conceptual. It's like the fog temporarily parts and you go, oh, so you see directly what's right there. And often the hallmark that is a genuine insight is that the reflection is, oh, that's what they mean. Oh, that's what they mean by materiality aggregate. Oh, that's what they mean by conditionality. Oh, that's what they mean by transient. Oh, that's what they mean by unsatisfactory. Yeah? So there is the reflection, which is in the intellectual appreciation of what has been seen. But what has been seen directly. It's not come via an intellectual. It's not something that's been strapped together intellectually, like logic or reason or any of those forms of knowledge. It is a direct apprehension. A direct apprehension and comprehension in that moment. And then there's the intellectual reflection, which is just, as it were, a confirmation of what's been seen. Okay, so insight knowledge is a different kind of knowledge to intellectual knowledge. Now, a trap that people fall into is believing that because they've had one of those instances, that they have now understood. They've now understood transience, or they've now understood what it is that a hindrance arises upon. And they fall into the trap of believing their intellect, of believing that that qualifies as understanding. And so they retain this intellectual appreciation of what it is that they've seen. And that's a mistake, because you actually have to see it again and again and again. You're constantly chipping away by noting, and then having these direct true insights, which are clarifications of what is actually there. We want to get to the point where we've chipped away at the wrong perceptions, the wrong way of seeing so much that we just spontaneously see things as being transient. So the wrong perception or that things are permanent is gradually replaced with the true perception that things are impermanent. So any intellectual conclusion drawing that occurs from an individual instance of an insight is pretty much, well, I was going to say it's worthless, but that would be hugely unfair, because to even have got to this point is magnificent. It's wonderful that anyone gets to this point and is seeing things like transience and is seeing things like conditionality. Was it the Buddha said, better than 100 days, better than 1,000 days is one day when transience has been seen, something along those lines. So it's a wonderful place to be, and it's not an out-and-out criticism, it's just an observation that you cannot rely on that intellectual appreciation, that counts for very little. Because what happens is people stop watching. They say, oh, I've understood that now. No, you haven't. The understanding that we want, the knowledge that we want, is something far beyond the intellectual. So you always have to treat intellectual conclusion drawing with a pinch of salt. It's fine, it can be helpful, but you don't want to set too much of a stall, if that even an expression, by it. Is that right? Anyway, it doesn't matter. You see what I'm saying? So, okay. So what we want to get to the point to, as the insight matures to the other end of the path, what you find is you're sitting and there is now no longer a need to deliberately note, because it is self-evident that everything arises, passes away. It's self-evident that there is nothing to be clung to. It is self-evident that things arise due to conditions and pass away. Yeah. So you go beyond the intellectual knowledge. So now you have the pure terrain. And there is this innate knowing and understanding that things are transient. It's not like you're getting one or two instances of it. It is every single instance that is arising is known and understood for what it is. But that's not the end of the story of knowledge, because then there is a point that comes, which technically is called the supramundane path and fruition. And there are four of those that occur on the whole journey of insight. And that is where, that is a different order of knowledge again from insight knowledge. And it's here when the insight knowledge becomes so keen that the mind finally gives up its obsession with the occurrence of phenomena, and it alights on that which is always here but is never attended to, which is the non-occurrence of phenomena. And so that represents what we call the supramundane path and fruition, and it's the moment when the mind lets go of the world and comprehends for the first time, for the second time, for the third time, for the fourth time, that there is indeed something beyond the arising and passing away of phenomena, which, because it does not arise, because it does not pass away, is always is. It is what is. So there again you have a different order, a different level of knowledge. It's not intellectual knowledge, it's not clear comprehension, it's not insight knowledge, it is another order of knowledge again. And even that is not the end of the story there of knowledge. So there is these four supramundane path and fruitions. We can go into all of this in subsequent videos. The point at which the fourth supramundane path and fruition has been gone through is the point at which insight, the value of insight meditation, comes to an end. It's done its task. It hasn't enlightened the meditator, but what it has done is removed all the obstacles for that true, final, total comprehension of the true nature of reality to arise. So there are no obstacles now to its arising, because it always is. There is only that there were ever things that were in the way which were stopping us, our attachments to life, being fettered to life psychologically, that had to be uprooted and got rid of first. And that's the purpose of Vipassana meditation. Once that's complete and there is the final giving up, there is the giving up of the final obsession, which is the obsession to find out the true nature of reality itself. Once that final obsession is given up, then there is this moment of perfect comprehension of what has always been the case, but that has always been ignored, which is what people call full enlightenment, the realization of the true nature of reality. And so that, again, is another level of knowledge. That is true transcendent understanding, then, which is permanent freedom from suffering. So I think that's all that's worth pointing out, to go back to my original point, which is, this is why we note in meditation. So not to be afraid of noting, not to be afraid of thinking. Understand that it is nuanced, and there are points where thinking, contemplation, reflection are integral and need to be done, and are part of learning about how mind and body works, how conscious experience works. And then gradually there's the replacement of the intellectual with the direct knowledge and comprehension that comes from insight. And then that in turn leads to fruitions, and then fruitions creates the natural space for that one true comprehension and understanding to arise. So, yeah. I'll see how that goes down. Till the next time.